Okay, thanks for joining us again. Welcome back to the Bless Your Boys podcast. BlessYourBoys.com is your home for all things Detroit Tigers baseball on the SB Nation platform. Once again, I am your host, Brandon Day. So in part one of this long conversation about the Tigers farm system, Bless Your Boys prospect writer Jay Markle and I talked a lot about the pitching side of the equation, which is, of course, the better side of the equation. We took a few swings at maybe some of the young hopefuls who will get on the radar next year in the Tigers farm system. We looked at the big boys and look forward to seeing the best of the Tigers farm system, guys like Casey Mize and Matt Manning and Tarik Skubal, Alex Fiedo and the rest, all reaching the upper minors and making their final push toward the major leagues. But now it's time to talk about the position player side of things and how I want to approach this. You know, we could talk about Riley Green, we could talk about Isaac Paredes, but I think that the interesting decisions that the Tigers are going to have to make first off next year is that Derek Hill and Jose Azokar both had pretty good seasons, I think. You can weigh in on what you think about them, but we also, you know, we have kind of a host of guys who are stuck at Toledo, outfielders who don't really have a particularly good chance, like Robson, Danny Woodrow, you know, Dustin Peterson, I assume will be gone. They picked up Troy Stokes on the waiver wire, and I don't know what they're going to do with him. So they've got like this whole kind of clot of outfielders coming up. How do you see that shaking out? And what did you think of Hill or Azokar? Do you think they'll both get protected? Do you like them? Do you think either one took enough of a step to still have hope for them?
That is
just a little question.
A heck of a question, isn't it? Hill this season looked a lot like Jacoby Jones did in his first season in the majors. Is that a fair comparison?
Yeah, actually, I
don't
like that comparison.
Comparisons, but that's an easy way to put it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think they'll get protected, both of them. But that's more of a statement on the fact that the Tigers 40 man is just as full of ballast as real players.
Yeah.
I don't especially like either one of them. The thing with Jose Azokar, I saw him a few times over the course of two seasons in West Michigan, and he's got tools. He just... they vanish for no apparent reason, and then come back later. And so consistency is the name of the game with the both of them. So if Derek Hill can have his own kind of a Jacobisance, isn't that how you put it?
Yep.
And tap into that power more regularly and continue to be a defensive genius, yeah, he's got a shot. But as of right now, I don't love any of our outfield prospects in the high minors.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think I agree. I think the one thing I liked about Derek Hill was that we've been waiting for a really long time for some power to start showing up, and he did hit 14 home runs this year, I think 520-ish plate appearances, which, you know, kind of projects out to like 17, 18 home run power. You know, stole 20 to 21 bases again this year, basically. Like, kind of had those categories rocking for him. But it was really that outbreak in power that really piqued my interest, and especially the fact that he kind of finished strong. You know, every year when we make up the list, and this is, you know, a couple years running now, it's all like, you know, What do we think about Derek Hill? Is, you know, is there still a chance? Like, what do we need to see from him next year to keep him on our list? And every year he does just enough or someone else doesn't do enough, one of the two. But this year, yeah, I mean, I liked seeing that power from him. And I think Jacoby Jones is kind of an interesting comparison because they're both fast. They've got those force multipliers in their speed. And Jacoby Jones obviously has good raw, or at least, you know, maybe 55 raw power, maybe 60 on a good day. I've seen him hit some super long bombs, but Derek Hill probably doesn't have quite as much, but seeing that power kind of wax tells me that there's a little bit more of a chance there. And Derek Hill, unlike Jose Azokar, does walk a little bit more. Like, you know, is still badly fooled by spin a lot of the times, but is less likely to leave the strike zone on a fastball, I feel like, than Azokar is.
And that's what scares me about both of them, is that you say better, but that's an extremely low bar to clear. They both have very little plate discipline, and that has killed lots and lots and lots and lots of prospects before them.
Yep, for sure. And it's something that doesn't always come across. Like, I could look at Derek Hill's walk rates, you know, the past couple of years and think like, no, you know, for a minor league player, you know, Derek Hill has pretty good plate discipline. But if you see how often, he's chasing, there's work to be done. Let's put it that way. He is 23, so he's not super old. And I always keep in mind with Derek Hill that he lost, you know, almost a year and a half, a full year and a half of development time due to injuries early in his minor league career. So perhaps there is still hope there. I wish we could have, and I knew this wouldn't happen, but I would have liked to seen Derek Hill get moved up to Toledo just so I could see what would happen. And I felt the same about Isaac Paredes. It was just, you know, just selfishness on my part. I wanted to see what would happen if you give them the Major League Baseball and see if all of a sudden the power numbers, you know, kind of jumped off the charts a little bit, but so it goes.
Yeah, I think this has been a really interesting year for Derek Hill, particularly because, especially at the beginning of the year, I think Keenan was about to absolutely implode because they were batting him ninth and bunting once a game. And I spoke to, I don't want to throw anyone under the bus here, so I'll say I spoke to a professional in the industry about Derek Hill and asked him about that with the heavy implication that I felt that it was not the right way to be handling his development. And the industry professional told me I didn't know what I was talking about and that Derek Hill would be fine and the Tigers were doing the right thing. He and I did not get along. In any case, so there is at least some faith among some people in the industry that the Tigers are handling him okay. So I'm curious to see if the way that he performed once he sort of started to perform in the middle of the season changes next year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's interesting to hear. I mean, it doesn't necessarily like bother me that much that they have some of these guys trying to lay down a bunt here or there. The issue with that is you should be trying to get these guys as many plate appearances as possible. Like, for whatever you're trying to teach, whatever, you know, whatever methods you think you have, in the end, it all comes down to just getting enough work, you know, getting enough work against, you know, good competition, age appropriate competition to improve. And when the Tigers use too many of those plate appearances to have guys laying down bunts, especially in A-ball, like, you know, why are you trying to bunt against guys who don't even have a breaking ball yet? Like, you know, what does that tell you? What does that teach you? I'm going to say that industry professional was probably wrong. That's my take on it anyway. All right, so let's move up to the big boys, because I think that's just going to be an interesting decision-making area there next year, what they do with the outfielders at Toledo. But the guys that we're actually interested in here, we're going to talk Riley Green, we're going to talk Daz Cameron, and we're going to talk Isaac Paredes, and then we'll get into anybody else that we think you know, piqued our interest. Where would you like to start?
Can we start with Paredes?
Yeah, let's do that.
By let's, I mean you.
Sure. I mean, Isaac Paredes had an interesting season because, I mean, you have to keep in mind that Isaac Paredes is very young, and I'm not talking to you necessarily. I know you know this, but Isaac Paredes is only 20 years old, I believe, and I'm not, let me see when he turns 21.
That would be the 18th of February.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, he'll be 21 next February. Is that your birthday?
No.
Do you just know that off the top of your head, you sicko?
No, I'm looking at pipeline right now.
Okay, that makes me feel better. Yeah, I mean, so you have to take that into account in general anyway. And last year, I believe that Isaac Paredes and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. were the only two teenagers there, and both of them wrecked shop. The only two who were there consistently. And so I think we all kind of looked for Isaac Paredes to come out this year and just, you know, just mash at Erie. And that really didn't happen until late in the season. But the thing about it, and I watched Isaac Paredes a lot this year because I was watching Erie, you know, for all the starting pitchers. The thing about him is that early in the season, the Tigers pretty clearly had him emphasizing going the opposite way and trying to use, you know, a little bit more of the, it's not, you know, everybody thinks this way. I can pin it to Lloyd McClendon, but sort of the Lloyd McClendon approach. Like, we want you to spray the ball around. We don't want you to be too pull happy yet. And he seemed to take that to heart and was hitting a lot more line drives the opposite way. And then late in the season, it felt like the power, you know, kind of came back. Like, you know, whatever he'd been doing, you know, it all clicked for him. Or he decided, nah, forget this, I'm going to just start mashing some and pretty much came on like a house on fire, you know, in August and looked great. You know, but the thing about him is he always looks great. It's just a question of like how much power is he going to hit for, because he's such a good hitter already. Like he has fantastic hands. You know, the plate discipline, you know, needs to improve a little bit, but you know, for that level and for his age, his plate discipline is ridiculously good. I mean, he doesn't offer too much at stuff that's off the plate. He'll swing at breaking balls down and swing over those pitches, but you don't see him, you know, badly fooled more than once by a pitcher. He seems to learn from at bat to bat really well, and eventually will have your number if you face him too many times. There's just so much to like there as a hitter. We could talk about his defense a little bit, but those were my impressions of his season, that it was a little bit of a re-entrenchment early in the year, you know, trying to work on, you know, just a little bit more like pure hit tool. And then late in the season, he seemed to just kind of turn it on. And it's going to be really interesting, I think, to watch him in the Arizona Fall League. I think he's going to do some damage out there.
That intelligent adaptability, I think, is kind of a sneaky tool that people don't pay enough attention to. Jonathan India, who is probably not the best, but one of the best players I've ever seen live. He came out in a big way right before his draft class was taken. And when I saw him, that was the thing that he showed more than anything else. Yeah, his hit tool is impressive. He hits for a bit of power. He's alive in the field. But he's intelligently adaptable. And, you know, you can say the same thing about Paredes. And so both of them have that working for them. And I think Paredes doesn't get enough credit for that from the national media.
Yeah, I don't think there's that enough appreciation for him as a smart hitter yet. And from what I've seen, I think he's a pretty smart hitter. And he just has the raw tools. He doesn't strike out, you know, hardly at all. His strikeout to walk ratio was basically even this year. You know, he takes his hacks. Like he's not up there like trying to walk and waiting for pitches that are, you know, perfectly in his wheelhouse necessarily, but he can get the bat on just about anything close, put the barrel on anything in the strike zone. And if you miss to him on the inner half, he's going to hurt you. He's going to hurt you bad. So, yeah, all in all, I thought, you know, a pretty good season. Like, maybe the numbers don't pop off the chart when we're looking at PCL and, you know, some of the other, like, Southern League numbers. Sometimes, you know, guys will all have, like, you know, everybody seems to hit 20 home runs in some of these leagues, and it can leave you thinking that a guy who hit 13 home runs in 550 plate appearances, you know, is just kind of an average power guy at best. But I think there's a lot more to come. Once again, you know, like posted a 142 WRC plus with Erie last year and a 126 in the Florida State League. This year, 133 WRC plus, so 33% better than a league average hitter in a league where he was probably 2 or 3 years younger than almost everybody he faced.
Once he settles in, that power is going to come back. Not come back, but come in.
Yeah. And I just think, you know, you give him the major league ball at Toledo next year, and you're going to see some fireworks. I won't be surprised if he hits 25, 30 home runs if he's at Toledo all year next year. Hopefully he won't be, because honestly, I think he's more ready for the major leagues than Eugenio Suarez was when Suarez was called up in 2014 to fill in for Jose Iglesias. Paredes looks like the better hitter and the more mature and prepared hitter already. So I don't know if the Tigers will move him that quickly, but I don't like the idea of just stalling him out in Toledo all next year either. So we'll see what happens. Do you have any real thoughts about, you know, position? Like, I mean, I think everybody's kind of set, like, he's probably going to play third base. Do you think it's worthwhile the way things are now to keep him at shortstop as long as possible, though, and try to make it work?
Sure. I mean, what have the Tigers got to lose?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, why not?
Really?
Yeah, we don't really have any other shortstops who can hit.
So. Yeah, and so if he can make it work, good. And if he can't, well, we kind of saw that coming. But next season, what's a couple defensive runs saved, lost at the shortstop position anyway? I hate saying it like that, but let's be realistic. They're not competitors next year.
Yeah, they are not. They are probably not competitors for a couple years. Yeah, at best. But, yeah, I mean, the way I've been looking at it is that the advent of the shift, with more guys trying to hit the ball in the air and with a lot more strikeouts, you know, there's just less balls in play. And it leads me to believe that you're more apt to be able to put someone at shortstop who has good hands and a good arm, but not the kind of range you would associate with a shortstop. And Paredes definitely doesn't have good enough range to play shortstop according to a, you know, a traditional way of thinking about it. But I do wonder if maybe you could squeeze it in there. Probably won't happen, but I do like the idea of keeping him at shortstop and hopefully using that to kind of egg him on this offseason to trying to become a little bit leaner and more athletic. Like, he doesn't strike me as, like, overweight necessarily. He's just a thickly built kid. He's just a grown man already, and he's not fast, and some of those things are never going to change, but I do kind of like it as if they are using it as a bit of a carrot and stick thing. Like, you know, you want to stay at shortstop, you know, you all right, you got to come back, you know, at this weight, you know, this after this offseason, we want to see you doing all kinds of, you know, isometric exercises and box jumps and getting more explosive athleticism. If they can kind of goad him into some of that with playing shortstop as the carrot next season, I'm all for it. When the time comes, I assume that the Tigers will simply move him to third base and he will slot in there and do.
Especially considering Candelario has A, underwhelmed, and apparently been earmarked for first.
Yeah, and I guess that's just to make, you know, room so that they can get a good look at Dowell Lugo, whose defense at third has actually been quite good, I have to say. But yeah, Jamer Candelario, man, that's been disappointing. Like, he still has all the kind of peripherals that you would associate with a guy who's going to break out and really hit for you, but it just doesn't seem to be coming, and I don't know, maybe next year is sort of his last chance at this point, unfortunately. Yeah. All right, let's move on and talk about, well, all right, since we're already in the upper minors, we'll get to Riley Green in a second. Did you kind of come away with any impressions of Daz Cameron's season? He kind of went through some of the same things Derek Hill did, where he seemed to be in the doghouse for the middle of the summer. He was batting ninth for a while behind Jake Rogers. Seemed to have a little bit of a rough go this season.
Yeah, Daz Cameron is not a guy I paid a lot of attention to this season, and that probably wasn't right or fair. It's more just a function of the fact that my lens is more zoomed in on the minor leagues. I mean, the lower minor leagues. But yeah, he really. Didn't really hear any particularly good things about him this season. I was listening to, I think I-75 Drive is Roger and Chris's podcast about the Toledo Mud Hens. Is that correct?
Everybody should check them out.
Yeah, they're an excellent pair, and I'm very happy for them in their current endeavor. But they had some excellent takes on Daz Cameron, where their position is basically, listen, he's 22. He has done nothing but hit since he got to the Tigers organization. Yeah, it was a down year, but we'll see what happens next year. They're not saying, you know, don't give up hope yet. He's still a good ball player. They're saying we don't know what he is.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, my impression was just that, I mean, it's hard to tell if there's, like, some kind of, like, you know, struggle going on a little bit between Daz and the coaches. It just seemed to me that he was, you know, on the outs a little bit and maybe fighting them on some things, rightly or wrongly. But overall, I mean, it wasn't a bad season. And yeah, I mean, I think the same way. Like, he's still 22. We'll kind of just chalk this up to maybe a growth year and see what happens next season. I thought we might see a little bit of a power spike this year. That didn't really come. He struck out more than you'd like to see. You know, he's got the power and the speed to still be a pretty darn good player. I don't think any of us really thought his ceiling was as a, you know, a guy who was going to be a star or even like a guy who might like touch, you know, all-star voting at some point. He's more a guy who I think, like, this guy is a more solid prospect than, say, Jacoby Jones or Derek Hill is. So, yeah, I don't know. I think we should just kind of be in a holding pattern with Daz and see how things go for him next season.
200 at-bats in the next season, maybe the outlook will be completely different.
Yeah, yeah, it very, very well could be, because you know he's going to be working at it hard this offseason.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
All right. So, I mean, unfortunately, I mean, I guess this kind of leads us to kind of the central problem is that those are really the only guys that are even kind of really worth talking about in the upper minors. And as someone who, you know, follows the lower minors more acutely and is, you know, on site in West Michigan a lot of the time, it just feels like there isn't much coming either. You know, it's something I've been had on my mind that even when, you know, this glut of talent that's in the upper minors right now, part of which came in trade, part of which, you know, has come from the high draft picks, when those guys all graduate, is there much in the lower minors to look forward to besides Riley Green? Did you see anybody who you like, maybe? I mean, I know Wenzel, you know, we'll just have to see what happens with
Yeah.
Hannah Parker.
With Wenzel and Parker, there's a lot of question marks there. I liked Quintana a whole lot more than the numbers showed. I mean, he was god-awful statistically in West Michigan, but I think we're going to see that a completely different story next season. I was big on Cody Clemens from what I saw. He's in Double A now. He really didn't hit, but it's a 13-game sample. I'm not too worried about that.
And in the Florida State League, you know, you're only going to hit for so much power. And I thought, you know, he held his own there, okay, but just didn't really get any traction going, I guess is how I'd put it.
Seems well, like no one ever said he would be a big offensive performer. Well, people did, but not any of the sources that I trust.
But I think that's just, you know, that's the hope. You know, like he was the one guy from that draft class, you know, in the lower down that we were like, maybe Cody Clemens. And he got off to a hot start, and obviously he has the name. But yeah, he wasn't ever someone who I thought had more than like a slender chance of being
I do
player.
Like him still, just not as a star player, just as one of your solid guys who... You know,
yeah, kind of a role player, maybe sort of a Brandon Dixon-ish type player if things work out.
Yeah, absolutely.
For him. But yeah, I think that's kind of the ceiling.
I can absolutely see him in a Brandon Dixon role. I think you make a solid point. There's really not a whole lot coming. I'm struggling here. I'm
and
thinking
this is the
hard.
Concern, right? Yeah, I mean, this is the concern that after the guys who are in the upper minors already are not necessarily that much a product of the Tigers drafting or international free agent signings and their development. A lot of it is guys that they got who, you know, apart from Manning, I think Manning and maybe Burroughs are the ones who, like, you know, the Tigers stamp is all over those two guys. But yeah, it's discouraging that you look in the lower minors and, you know, all the Tigers' efforts to improve their drafting, to, you know, hopefully improve their player development. It doesn't really seem like there's much sign of hope
now,
down there yet. And I would, you know, Parker Meadows and Wenzel Perez are obviously both, what, 19?
Yeah.
In Class A, you know, young for the league. And I wouldn't really say much more about them until we kind of see how they bounce back next year. But yeah, I will say this.
I was not high on Wenzel last year. Still not high on him this year, but there were days when he looked like a completely different player in a good way.
Yeah, the flashes
right,
were
right.
There.
He's coming out more and more. And if he's that player consistently next season, I'm more than happy to admit that I was wrong. A couple of guys who I think we might hear do well next year are Packard, Lipschitz, and Cooper Johnson. So,
I like all three of those guys.
So I know Lipschitz... There are some guys who don't like him very much, like Jay Chipman does not like Andre Lipschitz. He doesn't like his swing. I asked him, what do you mean you don't like his swing? And he said, I don't like anything about his swing. Stem to stern, whole thing, needs to be scrapped. But on the other hand, Now, don't take this as a one-for-one comparison. I'll put that asterisk there. He looked a lot like Paredes looked when I saw Paredes in West Michigan. Of course, Andre Lipschitz is significantly older than Paredes was. And, of course, we're not expecting him to have quite as much talent when it comes to making consistent quality contact. But he's just a pain in the butt at the plate because he doesn't ever give up.
Yeah, I can sympathize with Chipman on the swing issues. I mean, it's sort of a, you know, it almost reminds me of like a player in the 80s, like kind of a slap hitter from the 80s, kind of a swing. But he does seem like a really, you know, I mean, obviously there's the, what did he study, like nuclear engineering or some damn thing in college. Yeah. Like, he's obviously a very bright guy. And I like taking some guys like that. Like, I would agree with you that sometimes the way makeup as a term gets thrown around is foolhardy and things get overplayed. But I do like a player that is smart and motivated. Like, I'll take both of those things and, you know, hope that, you know, now that Lipschitz can kind of, or Lipsius, excuse me, can fully commit himself to baseball. Like, maybe he puts on some muscle this offseason, does a little bit of a swing retool, and all of a sudden you've got a player, because he's a pretty versatile defender. He's got a strong eye for the strike zone. And I think what you're seeing with him that reminds you of Paredes is what I'm seeing, which is just like, you know, neck. Like, he's thinking ahead of everybody else on the field a little bit more than anybody else.
The tools
else,
aren't so. Quite there the same as Paredes. I'm not trying to make that kind of comparison. It's just the mentality is similar.
Yeah, what did you think of, I mean, I liked Cooper Johnson. Bryant Packard kind of snuck up on me. I was sort of like, yeah, okay, that's a decent pick there. And then you guys were all like, oh yeah, we really like that Bryant Packard pick. We're putting him in the top 30. And I was a little bit, I had to go and do some deep diving before I was okay with that. Cause I really wasn't paying that much attention to him. Did you get a chance to see him a few times?
When I was able to go to West Michigan, he was on the injured list. And then he came back and continued to crush and was moved up. So no, the game since he was drafted, he was on the injured list. But everyone who was able to see him had very nice things to say, and the numbers, of course, support that. Now, there's also the flashing neon warning sign that says information bias. People like players who put up good numbers. So it's very possible reports are exaggerated just due to that nature of evaluators to say, look, this guy is performing well, and I can see why.
Yeah, that's true. But from what I saw of him, I mean, I thought there was a lot to like in his swing and approach, and, you know, we'll see how it goes. It sounds like the Tigers are, you know, he can't run well. It's sort of a limited path to the majors type of a guy. He's going to have to hit. It's going to be pretty much an all-bat profile. And, you know, I think maybe he will. They're going to move him to first base, it sounds like. And, yeah, we'll see how he takes to the Florida State League next year, and if he hangs well there, I could see.
I would like that very much.
And being in Erie,
I saw him in
season.
The batting cage, and I liked what I saw there. And as for as much garbage as people were giving Meadows and how the Tigers were handling Meadows, I realize this is a bit of a jump, but the batting cage reminded me of this. I was not really paying attention to batting practice as much as I should have been one of the times I was out there. And Meadows got in the cage, and this, you know, have you ever heard the phrase, the bat makes a different sound? Yeah, Meadows startled me. Like, the sound his bat made when it hit the baseball startled me.
He does have some pop.
Yeah.
I think people can sleep on that a little bit because he's a little bit ungainly. I mean, he does have some swing issues, but, you know, I've always kind of been of the attitude that really long-limbed, tall, slender guys like that, you have to, you know, they just tend to take more time. I think you can look at, you know, this isn't like the ideal happy comparison, but, you know, you look at a player like Victor Reyes, who's 24 and is still, you know, trying to figure those things out at a level where he's, you know, until fairly recently been quite overmatched.
Yeah.
That stuff can take some time. So, yeah, I think Parker Meadows, we can give a little bit of a pass to this year. Wenzel Perez, like, I kind of look at him like, you know, probably like the next Willy Castro. Like, he's going to be a guy with a pretty strong hit tool, but not enough power to be impactful. And then we'll just have to see if his defense comes along, because obviously Wenzel's got to improve there.
Wenzel's defensive showings varied wildly between some smooth, excellent actions, which are exactly what you like to see, and just butchery and everything in between.
Yeah. Well, and that's what it kind of looked like from Quintana to me when I saw him, like, you know, was blowing some plays. And obviously there were a few that it sounded like the, you know, it was just some scorekeeper kind of nonsense where the first baseman just didn't hang onto a ball in the dirt, that kind of thing. And they gave him an error. But when you have that many errors, you know, there's something going on there. But a lot of the time when I saw him, he looked perfectly good to me. So, yeah.
We should also keep in mind Wierski.
Yeah.
He's not necessarily a great prospect, but he's in my like top 35. He's in like the five that missed.
Yeah, that's kind of where category. I got him. Yeah. Yeah, he's interesting.
He has a great deal of difficulty recognizing spin, and his issues got worse as the season progressed, but he's also 21, so he's like the age of a college draftee, and was able to hit over the course of a full West Michigan season. It declined sort of at the end, and I wonder if that isn't because he's never had a real full season before.
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah, so I think next year is very important for his development, because Lakeland is notorious for suppressing hitters.
Yeah.
And he's the type of hitter that, you know, if a pitcher can figure out where his weaknesses is and pull out a good breaking ball or two, they could probably carve him up ends right now.
Yeah. And he's also a guy who, you know, in that league, it's easier to keep him in the park. And obviously the thing that Ulrich Boyarski really has going for him is good raw power.
Yeah.
You know, if that is diluted by the fact that he's in the Florida State League, then yeah, it's going to be on him to improve his discipline, learn how to drive the ball on a line a little bit more. I mean, there's going to be a lot going on there. But yeah, I mean, he's kind of like a 35 future value type guy. Like, you know, there's enough of an interesting skill set there where if it came together, it could happen for him. There's a couple other, you know, there's a couple other guys who maybe you could say something similar about.
So yeah, I'd say keep him on your back burner.
Yeah, yeah, we'll keep an eye on him. And I think like we can look at Sam McMillan and Cooper Johnson the same way. Like both of them are, you know, interesting possibilities as future, you know, probable backup catcher type guys. But you know, if one of them breaks out with a bat, like Cooper Johnson has pretty good power. Sam McMillan, I thought, took a couple big steps forward in terms of just his sort of comfort at the plate against
Sam
this level
McMillan
of pitching.
Is a weirdo.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird season.
Yeah, it really is. I think one of the more poignant observations Emily Walden ever made to me was that Sam McMillan has power, he just doesn't know how to use it. It's like, oh, that's what it is. And I know exactly what she's talking about once she said it. I hadn't picked up on that myself, but he is a big dude and he can drive it really far, but a lot of his farthest hit balls end up going foul for whatever reason. So if he can get his swing timed a little bit better, that's a scary player because of his ability to take walks as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, what did he, it was like a 16.8% walk rate at West Michigan this year. I mean, he is 20, and he has been in the system and kind of a disappointment since they drafted him in 2017, especially because they went over slot, you know, that was kind of like their big move, and then he kind of fizzled for, you know, for the first full pro season. But yeah, I mean, it was nice to see him at least take a step forward. And yeah, I mean, he's another guy who I kind of, like, the Tigers have a tendency to almost, and this is just my feeling about it, is that they almost teach, like, a two-strike approach before guys, you know, should even be thinking about that sort of thing. And, you know, some of what happened with Isaac Paredes early in the season kind of felt like that. And maybe there's something similar with Sam McMillan where it's, he just wants to be very careful to put the ball in play. He's trying not to strike out that much, trying to trim down the swing and miss. And as a result, he's letting some pitches that he could drive go, and, you know, maybe turning and just pulling too many balls foul on pitches that if he could keep his hands inside a little bit better, he would drive. So at least he and Cooper Johnson both give us something to watch in the catcher department. And maybe Elizar Alfonso as well, who was in Connecticut and was okay there and usually seemed to be in the mix whenever there was any run scoring going on, and, you know, looks okay. So yeah, at least there's some young catching depth down there anyway. All right, let's talk about Riley Green. That's what everybody wants to talk about. Taking forever with the tease here, but Riley Green looked awesome to me. Like, I like the pick. I was a little bit torn between him and J.J. Blade just because I kind of preferred, like, the college outfielder that was a little more proven. Yeah. And, you know, some of the concerns about Riley Green's defense and just, you know, and just foot speed kind of worried me a little bit. But all that proved to kind of be nonsense, and Riley Green looks, you know, like he probably won't play center field in the major leagues, but right now he can play center field fine, and man, the swing is beautiful. He is an advanced hitter. So yeah, what were your impressions of him this year?
Exactly what you just said. Like, almost down to the word is how I feel about him. I did kind of want Blade instead. And there was those little rumors circulating that maybe the White Sox were going to pass on Vaughn. And I wanted Vaughn because...
Sorry, Spencer Torkelson's coming for us next year.
Well, we're, well, if you want to get into that, we're probably more likely to take Emerson Hancock.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that the Vanderbilt shortstop?
No, he's a pitcher. Oh, okay. He's a college pitcher.
Oh, God. They better not. All right, let's not go into this, though. It's a whole other show.
It is a whole other show, and it would require a heck of a lot more research than I've done.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Riley Green's a wonderful addition to the system, and I really look forward to seeing him continue to succeed. The numbers did turn down a little in West Michigan, but, you know, that's okay. We're talking about short sample sizes at every stop along the way. Less than 100 at-bats at each assignment. So the tools are there for him to continue to succeed, and I hope for him to have a quick ascent to the major leagues.
Yeah. He's a guy who does feel like he could be at Erie by the end of next year. Like it wouldn't upset me, and I don't think people should expect that. But Riley Green seems like the type of player where there's going to be a real big jump in the next year or two, and he's going to be real close. Like, it's, boy, that's a hell of a hit tool he's got. I mean, the discipline is already good. You can see the raw power is already 60 grade. Those first couple games in the GCL where he was hitting them over the trees to right field, it was like, oh, baby. I mean, he's 18. there's just a lot to like. I almost don't have that much to say about him because I'm just like a little giddy and just like, yeah, hurry up, Riley, get here because it's looking real good. But he also, just proved a lot of people wrong with a lengthy series of highlight reel plays down the stretch for the Whitecaps. It was like every night it seemed like he was making some diving play on the warning track or something. It's looking like Derek Hill out there.
Hey, don't jinx it. We don't want another Derek Hill.
No, he'll be fine.
Yes, he will be just fine.
Yeah, the hit tool is there. He's going to be good. Yeah.
That was a joke that did not go over well. For any of you who do not know my sense of humor, I know Brandon does.
You're dry, though, yeah, so sometimes I'll just let it go right by.
I know Brandon knows my sense of humor. Please, listeners, do not think that I think Green is headed down a hill path.
Yeah, we're just being superstitious for fun, folks. but Riley Green, I mean, that was a good pick. I think they kind of shut me up there a little bit as far as how things have gone with him. And now we just need, like, you know, four more guys like that.
Yeah. No problem.
Yeah.
Come on, Al. Reach into your grab bag. I know you got him in there.
Yep. Hopefully there's some damn good picks in the draft next year. And, you know, another good trade deadline. Maybe we'll be in business by then.
Which hitter do you think has the best chance to step up and be the next guy like that?
Who's in the system now?
Yeah.
Oh boy!
I know it's a tough question. Take time.
I mean, I don't really have any. I mean, obviously, like probably the smartest answers are Adenso Reyes and Jose De La Cruz, who both just murderized the Dominican Summer League, and have been among the two most prominent international free agent signings that the Tigers have had under Al Avila, and both of them are 17 and did really well. We're all going to be really looking forward to seeing them come over to the GCL, hopefully next summer, I would assume. That's usually when it goes down, especially for guys who are doing that well. But I'll probably take them. And I actually like Parker Meadows more than Keenan does. Like, some of the issues with his swing, I do think are going to be solved simply by him putting more muscle on himself. Like, he's just a little bit, gangly, really, is the only way to put it right now. And I think as he gets a little bit stronger, some of that whippiness in the bat, some of that tendency to sort of arm bar and get his left shoulder down too much and trying to drive the ball in the air. I don't know. There's the issues I see there aren't that problematic to me. And I think, like, it's best with a player like him to wait until he's closer to his physical development before we start getting too worked up over the swing issues. But, we'll see how it goes. I know it was a disappointing year, but again, he was pretty young there, and next year we'll probably prove some things one way or the other. But if I have to take someone who's already in the A-ball levels or above, I will take Parker Meadows.
Decent pick.
How about yourself?
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah.
I would say either Meadows or Quintana if we have to say someone A-ball or above.
Yeah.
And I'm taking the exception rule on Quintana because he played in A-ball.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to do that?
Yeah, that's fine.
Someone below A-ball, I think Adinzo Reyes, maybe, or our international $2.85 million man of mystery, Roberto Campos.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see what goes on there.
Yeah. I read an interesting piece on him where, I don't remember who put it out, it's very possible it was put out on Bless You Boys, where the Tigers essentially sequestered him, which could be a two-edged sword. On the one hand, they assured that he was going to be theirs, but on the other hand, once they decided they wanted him, what quality competition has he faced?
Yeah.
Although, and so has that stifled him at all?
Yeah, well, it's just so tough, too, because at that age, you don't know if there's really quality competition available or if it really matters. You know, there's still, like the raw skill building, going on. The other thing about that, too, is that a lot of teams do that. Like it isn't that rare that, a couple months before July 2nd, all of a sudden there's this guy that, no one knew was available, and he's already agreed, basically, with someone, and it comes out of nowhere. Like, that is a thing. The Tigers kind of looked a little goofy just by sort of overselling that. Like, they were all giddy about it. Like, just let the kid get here, and we'll see. But, yeah.
Yeah. At least they're excited about something.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, overall, we know kind of where we're at. The Tigers have fantastic pitching in the minor leagues. There isn't as much maybe in the lower minors as we'd like to see. We kind of like to see that pipeline continue. But the breakout of Skubal, some of the development, I think, that's gone on this year. Even, to look at, what happened with Tyler Alexander and Matt Hall. Like, two guys who I didn't really... came into the season after watching them last year thinking, I don't even know if either of these two guys is ever going to be able to relieve at all. And both made some changes, at the AAA level. Juan Nieves up there seems to have some game as a pitching coach and kind of got them both cross-stepping a little bit more. It looked like Tyler Alexander lowered his arm angle, and all of a sudden, both of them, are in the major leagues and looking, semi-viable. I still am not going to project great things, but both of them turned out to be, guys who could be useful. And you never know, maybe next year that'll be Garrett Hill, or it'll be, I don't know, Brad Bass or something. But I do like Zach Hess. Dude,
Brad Bass.
Yeah, I know. He's a ground ball machine, man. You can't get that ball in the air. It's a blue
ball.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure the Tigers love that. I'm pretty sure I have actually never seen Brad Bass pitch. So
I saw him throw 6 no-hit innings. And I didn't even realize it was a no-hitter until someone else pointed out to me.
He was just going so fast.
I imagine it would be like watching Mike Pelfrey throw 6 no-hit innings.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like Brad Bass. If things all come together for him, he'll be a Mike Pelfrey-ish type pitcher. Yeah.
Hey, aren't you excited for that?
Yeah,
I'm sure. Let me pose a question to you.
Okay.
Do you think, considering the Tigers have some of the, if not the best pitching prospects group in the minor leagues, do you think there's any path to like a 2015 Mets-ish run at a postseason, even though we don't have a lot of bats?
I think something is possible, but it would take them, finding at least one kind of under the radar good, like maybe, like, let's just say, like, okay, we sign Scooter Gennett and they find someone else to hit who can play first base, and both of those guys do well. Like, if something like that happened, I could see the Tigers being interesting into the second half. And, you know, this is almost the lowest percentage type of outcome. Like, this is highly unlikely. But, yeah, I mean, if a couple, you know, if they found a couple guys like that, I think Kristen Stewart's going to hit better next year. You look at Nico Goodrum, Victor Reyes, Travis DeMeritt. I think one of those guys is liable to have a good season next year and have some kind of a minor breakout. So, I mean, I think there's some chance of that. And then that would involve, like, you know, the Tigers, like, being proactive and bringing up some of their pitching prospects and also probably being more aggressive than they'd like to be at moving guys to relief and building a really kick-ass bullpen, which I think they could do. I actually like a lot of the arms that are in the Tigers' bullpen right now. It's incumbent on Rick Anderson to get a couple of these guys cleaned up to where they're just a little bit more consistent strike throwers. I like David McKay. I like Jose Cisneros' stuff. You know, there's a couple guys like that. And if they want to convert, obviously I love Gregory Soto's fastball. Like, that thing is bananas if he knows where it's going. And you take him, you take Anthony Castro. You've got Joe Jimenez, and you've got Brian Garcia, who I think will take a step forward next season. You know, it's still his first year back from Tommy John. And to me, like, he just hasn't popped. Like, the stuff doesn't look quite as, like, crisp out of his hand as it did before he went down. And that, I think, is pretty normal. So I'm going to look at that and think, like, yeah, the Tigers might be able to build a pretty good bullpen next year, and they should have plenty of rotation depth. They should have the best rotation depth in the game. They won't necessarily have the best, you know, top three, that's for sure. But I think Matt Boyd will be a little better next year. You don't naturally give up this many home runs and have it just, you know, keep happening to this degree. I think it'll tone itself down next year. You've got Daniel Norris, you've got Spencer Turnbull. At some point, Michael Fulmer's going to come back. Maybe they'll sign someone in the offseason. You know, you got Tyler Alexander. You got a couple guys like that who can kind of fill in and spot start for you. The pitching could actually be pretty damn good next year if the Tigers had reason to care enough to try. We'll just see. I don't expect that to happen, but if they hit on a couple bats, you know, or maybe if they made a trade somehow this offseason, some kind of crazy challenge trade, like we're going to trade, you know, Alex Faedo and Bo Burrows for, I don't know, somebody's like 50 future value, like middle infielder or something. Or if they like went crazy and tried to get like Brandon Rogers from the Rockies for like Turnbull and Faedo or something like that. I don't know if that's even possible. Probably not. I just keep thinking of the Rockies because they're in such a bizarro state as a franchise, and where they keep bringing up like good position prospects but nobody fancy, and just the pitching is just never there. So I don't know, something like that. Maybe there's always some hope. Like, baseball is full of randomness. One thing I'll say this again about talking to Dan Szymborski is that the thing that was most interesting to me is that when you're talking to him, you realize, like, this is a guy who is better than all of us at projecting baseball. Like, you know, he has this an algorithm built. He knows all the other people who have like the top projection systems. They all know what's going on, and their appreciation for how wrong they are it is pretty high. And that just tells me, like, oh my god, I know nothing probably. It's like a good reminder that, you know, even someone whose job it is to project, you know, is only really, you know, the goal is really just to be better than the other guy, because, you know, you're not going to be perfect. It's just impossible. Yeah. All right. And I'm going to throw a question for you at the end, is that the Tigers seem to be in some debate about whether or not they're going to bring Doug Menkiewicz back as the AAA manager next season. And I don't know this, but the Tigers obviously like Mike Ribello, who is the manager for AA Erie this year. And the Tigers have shown some interest in sort of like having Ribello bring those guys along, like from Lakeland to Erie this year. Do you think that Mike Ribello will end up being the Toledo Mud Hens manager next year? Do you have any just predictions or even a guess at such a thing?
Nope.
Yeah, it's hard to know, isn't it?
None whatsoever.
I know, that's the kind of thing that's almost impossible to know.
It is not only impossible to know, I don't put a ton of stock into minor league management, because a lot of them, not all of the decisions, obviously, on the field decisions are dependent upon the man himself. But a lot of decisions are marching orders.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the manager is just a good face for the community in a lot of ways. For example, Lance Parrish, in my opinion, perfect manager for West Michigan. He's outstanding with the media, outstanding with the fans. It's good to have that sort of a team icon right in the heart of the fan base, especially slogging through the middle of this the middle of this rebuild. I don't think he has major league management potential. If he did, someone would have tapped into that already.
Yeah.
But he's tremendous for the position he's
in. Yeah, he's sort of a guy that...
As far as Mankiewicz goes, I don't even know what he's like as a manager because I care that little about minor league
managers. All right, we're going to leave that one. We're going to leave that one alone. The only reason I bring it up, and I tend to agree that like the managing in the minor leagues isn't managing fully the
yeah.
way
yeah.
the way you would do at the major league level. But it does feel to me like if there's one person in the Tigers farm system who they might be grooming to be the next Tigers manager after Ron Gardenhire, it would be Mike Ribello. So I think that's something to, at least for people to keep an eye on, because I think if they move him up to Toledo to follow along with Mize, Manning, Paredes, all those guys, that kind of tells you that he's going to be the man. Because the thing that Minkiewicz seems to have going for him that everyone says about him is that he's really good with the mentality, like really being able to kind of lean on young guys without breaking them and really, really push them to work hard every day and to understand that someone's always, trying to take your job and to sort of be like that hard ass at the end of the line, like the final boss that you have to sort of get by to get to the major leagues. So I don't know. Yeah, we'll see what happens there, but that might be something worth looking into
before we
wrap this up, because this has gone pretty long. I just want to talk about the Arizona Fall League real quick, because that's going to start up later this week, I believe. When the heck does it start? I can't remember. Oh yeah, September 18th, so Wednesday. That'll get going. The Tigers, the key guys that the Tigers are sending are Anthony Castro, Alex Lang, and Waldemar Pinto. Trent Skutnik is going as well, although there might have been a change to that today, I can't remember. But then the position players, Isaac Paredes, Jose Azokar, and Derek Hill. Is there anything you're going to be watching for? I mean, it's the Arizona Fall League,
Yeah, kind of. I want to see Paredes continue to be excellent. I want to see Lang settle in a little more into his relief role. I predicted correctly that Lang would be going to the Arizona Fall League. I completely whiffed on every single other prediction I made, but let's ignore that and just focus on the fact I was right about Lang. And Castro, same thing there, because they switched him to a relief role. I want to see the two of them just lean on their fastballs pretty heavily and try to blow guys away, because that's pretty much the advantage of being switched from starting to relief.
Yeah, people have kind of looked at Anthony Castro's relief appearances this year and been like, oh no, he's terrible as a reliever. People, wipe all that from your brain, because that's nonsense. Like, just ignore all that, because they didn't set Anthony Castro up to be a reliever. Like, they just threw him in as a reliever when they needed to, and then they brought him back to start when they needed to. He didn't really get a chance to get in any kind of a rhythm in that sort of role. And I love me some Anthony Castro. I like the fastball, and I love the slider now. I think he could be a damn good reliever. So I'm very interested to see him and Alex Lang and Pinto as well. Like, Pinto's got some game. He needs a lot better command. I'd definitely say that Castro and Lang are much more refined than Pinto is. But dude can touch 99, 100. So we'll see. We'll see what he's got there. And then, obviously Isaac Paredes, we both like to see mash. Do you think that the Jose Azokar, Derek Hill combo is a winner stays in the system, loser gets unprotected kind of a thing? I don't know if that's quite the case, but it's going to be interesting to see them side by side again against competition that will probably be younger to a large extent, and maybe easier for the two of them to feast on a little bit.
I don't know if it's winner stays in the system, but I think it is winner takes all.
Yeah. One of those two guys is going to have to impress, I think.
Yeah. And if they both impress, that's a good problem. But I really do. It feels like a winner takes all situation.
Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like only one of those guys can really be prioritized the way you would prioritize a top prospect at this point. And I still kind of feel like it's going to be Derek Hill winning out there, but yeah, that might be something to watch for. Although, of course, it's such a short season, you can't take terrible much out of it. But the fact that they're both there, when both of them got plenty of work this season, tells me that the Tigers want to see something out of one of the two of them. So yeah, we'll see what goes on with that. But yeah, action there will start up on Wednesday. If people want me to do a minor league recap of the Arizona Fall League every day, I probably will not, because it has nearly broken me to cover it 5-6 days a week all year long while picking up probably 30 to 40 major league recaps. And I really haven't gotten to write a lot of the more in-depth stuff I would normally have written and like to write. So I'm looking forward to the season winding down, enjoying some postseason baseball, and starting to do some more deep dives into the system, etc.
The season being over is going to be good for all of us. I know we're getting kind of down to the nubs on the staff side at Bless You Boys. And I'm not really helping all too much with that either. I've been on an extended hiatus trying to settle into my new routine. Really, you and Ashley and Rob have really just been spectacular here as the season winds down.
Oh, thank you very much. Yep. Just trying to drive it to the finish line, baby. Yep. All right. So we've got ourselves essentially a 2-hour marathon podcast right here that will hopefully catch everyone up to speed on what happened in the Tigers farm system, at least to a general degree, and give you all some things to yell at us about and to look forward to next season.
Yes, feel free to educate me about the things I got wrong and commend me about the things I got right.
Yep.
I'm on Twitter at jmarkle_byb.
Yep, and you can find me at fiscadoro74. We will talk to you all later. I'll try to get on that with some of the analysis. You can look for some of those pieces coming out. I promise I will write something like not particularly negative about Victor Reyes, because there's some stuff going on. It's kind of interesting. I wouldn't go buying stock necessarily, but yeah. So we'll get into those kind of things. You can look for all that coverage coming. And as the season winds down, all that will start ramping up. Because right now, yeah, we're just kind of struggling to the finish line to get everything covered on a daily basis. But, yep, you can look for all that content coming at blessyouboys.com. Thanks for being with me, Jay. You have a good night.
You too.
All right.